described as a composer whose music is a celebration of the multiplicity of musical language and evolving technologies. Our Blue Tunes featured artist this week has 20 albums to his credit, an award-winning and highly acclaimed Irish composer, Roger Doyle. And Roger joins us in studio for this online chat. You are very welcome, sir.
Thanks very much.
You've been given the moniker or label Godfather of Irish Electronica. Is that something that you're comfortable with? Or it does conjure up images of Don Corleone and his Fairlight.
I remember Donica Dennehy, my fellow composer, telling me that the word Godfather has all sorts of dark connotations, which it does associate with my music also, as well as a sort of benign overseer or maybe beginner, the first maybe.
Right.
In the 1970s when I started off working with technology. But I'm happy enough with the phrase, you know.
An endearing label. But as you say, you oversaw and witnessed the development and progression of electronic music, both globally and particularly in Ireland, being the first.
Yeah, I began at home with just two tape recorders and a microphone, and the strong desire to find out how to make this kind of music, as I'd heard others doing it, Pierre Henry in France and the Beatles on the Revolution number 9, for instance, and Karlheinz Stockhausen, and I just wanted to know how is this done, began experimenting at home, completely innocently, you know, without knowing anything about anything.
At what stage in your life was this? Were you always interested in this, or did you have other musical avenues that you were pursuing?
I was studying a composition at that time at the Royal Irish Academy of Music, so I was already on the track.
Right.
I was composing piano suites and pieces for flute and string trio.
Right.
And very
some lovely recordings, actually, with Brian Dunning and Liam Fitzgerald conducting the Baroque Players.
Absolutely.
Lovely stuff, yeah.
I wrote that in 1968.
So coming out of school then, you obviously had an intention to pursue music as a career or a passion.
Yeah, well, there was nothing left open to me, really. I had always loved music and played music. I didn't really think of myself that I'd ever be a composer, but knew it would be something to do with music. As I've said before, I was sitting around the house sleeping till lunchtime with my parents screaming for me to get a job. So I composed some music and showed it to the professor, A.J. Potter, at the Academy of Music, and he took me on. And from then on, I had to have something composed every 7 days. I had to have a new piece done every week, which I did. And about 2 years into that is when I first heard electronic music.
And up until then, I've seen a quote where you said that your musical influences were the Beatles and Debussy.
That's right. Beatles, Debussy and Stockhausen, maybe.
Right. And Beatles, there was another quote that I found fascinating where you said that you felt the Beatles... the thing about the Beatles is that I liked them a lot and then they went all weird and I hated them. And then you quote Revolver, Sgt. Pepper's and Magic Mystery Tour, probably the very types of Beatle music that you would now relate to?
It didn't take me long. No, I just remember at the time thinking they've gone from this sing-along lovely stuff to this weirder stuff. And at first I couldn't follow them into that weirder area. It didn't take me long, maybe.
But when you did,
days only.
When that door was open, then it was a new world.
Then I jumped right in, and I really believe the Beatles educated me and many others of my generation. They expanded my horizons and invited me into bigger worlds, bigger possibilities, and working with technologies too.
So after doing the composition in the academy...
And I applied for a Dutch government scholarship to study electronic music in Holland. And luckily, my 3 years at the academy was enough of a qualification to get me this scholarship. And of course, I submitted some of my works as well. So that was a real life changer, to actually go to study electronic music in Holland in 1974. And I spent the best part of 2 years there. The first year was with scholarship, spending money, and the second year I went back at my own expense.
Right.
I was so excited by it all.
All this time, Roger, were you involved in the music scene in Ireland? Because I have a recollection of you being involved in Supply, Demand and Curve.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was a drummer.
But you were the drummer of Supply, Demand and Curve, yeah? So were you doing other things like this to just keep your interest in music?
Or? Oh, yeah. I was a drummer for many, many years. Jazz rock, crossover, kind of fusion drummer for many years. I thought of myself as a drummer, and we toured all over Ireland. I have many memories of playing in the four corners of Ireland, and we never earned enough money to stay the night anywhere. So we'd drive back from Kerry repeatedly, or Donegal, and arrive in Dublin at 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I was sleeping on the... I mean, I'm not romanticising this, I'm just telling you. I'd sleep on the floor of the van on the way back and arrive back in Dublin. But then when I got the scholarship to go to Holland, that changed everything.
Right.
I stopped being... I guess up until then, part of me was thinking, I'm a drummer who also composes.
Mm. What was the turning, or is there a turning point then in the academic pursuit? You did the Utrecht scholarship, and then an award.
Again, there was no degree to get at the end of it. It was the University of Utrecht, the City University of Utrecht. There was no degree to get there, but I had such a fantastic time there that I kept asking them to have me as guest composer over and over. And I used to go back for many years afterwards as a guest composer and spend maybe a month in their studios. I had a friend. I made many friends in Utrecht. I'm very fond of the Dutch people. And I always had a place to stay whenever I went back. And again, living was cheap. And so I was guest composer there 5 or 6 times and kept composing. When I came back from Holland, I financed my first LP myself, brought it out.
On your own label?
On my own label, okay. Yeah. Oiso No, it was called. And some people thought that was some sort of avant-garde abstract term, but it actually is just a Dublin way of pronouncing I don't know. So I brought that out, got it made in Amsterdam and shipped it over back to Ireland. And that was such an important thing to do for my own self-belief.
At a time, too, when going indie wasn't the thing, was it? I mean, it was all about record labels and getting contracts with the majors. So the first album appeared on your own record label and...
Yeah, 1975.
Do you want to admit to how many copies were sold?
Yes, I. well, they're all gone now.
Out of stock.
I kept a little notebook. I had to sell 208 of them to break even.
Okay.
And I actually have a notebook somewhere with every sale written down. And it took 2 years to sell 208 of them.
Oh, but you did it.
So I did
you
it.
You did it.
I made 500 of them.
All right.
So I broke even after... 2 years and a bit.
Was that when things theatrical attracted you?
No, before that, yes, theatre really played an important role in my life shortly after. But in between, I had taken Oiso No, the record, round to all the record shops myself and round here to RTE. And my new work then was a piece called Thalia, which is a 30-minute electronic piece. It was the flexing of my... my electronic music muscles. It was my first big piece.
Okay.
And amazingly, CBS Records said they would release it.
Wow.
And it came out on CBS Classics.
Wow.
In 1978. I don't think it even sold 200 copies. but CBS did bring it out. Yeah, and then the theatre thing, when I was 30, I started acting and became hugely interested in theatre and specifically in the role of music for theatre, and I fell in with a theatre crowd.
Okay.
And
as an actor first?
Yeah, as an actor first.
Right.
Yeah, I used to sit in watching acting classes in the Focus Theatre. My good friend Alvin Fueri and I were thinking of forming, well, we'd worked together on a few shows in the Project Arts Centre. I used to sit in on acting classes in the Focus Theatre, just fascinated by the whole process.
And yes.
Being a shy person, I thought, you know, I'll never do that, you know.
Yeah.
It's almost, when I think back, it's almost like a scene from a movie, because they said to me, get up here, Roger, try it, you know. And I'd say, oh, no, I couldn't. But I got up on the stage and boy, did I take to it.
Really?
Because it had a structure. It was the Stanislavski technique, where you have reasons for doing things, or you invent a reason, or you invent who you are.
Mm.
And I found myself doing crazy stuff very quickly.
Mm. Did that inform your music composition then? Because you've said two words there that I think are important in your work. One is structure, and then the other is imagination, or at least forming an identity, because that's in much of your work, you seem to do that.
Yeah, well, that was identity as a character on stage.
Yes.
Yeah, I would play strange. I did some children's theatre where I was always the scary, strange guy who was very eccentric. I don't think I could do realism very well. I could do strange guys, and I could do later. Alwyn and I formed this company called Operating Theatre, and I would play some of the roles in that. And it was experimental music theatre. But I mean, money was never really, as I'm sure a lot of arty types will say, money wasn't really that important. It was just as long as it was just enough to get by. The really important thing was the love of the work.
Yes.
And doing the work.
Big works are very much a part of your repertoire and catalogue, in particular two works, Passades and Babel. The latter you spend years working on.
Yeah, 10 years on Babel.
Your what do they call it? Your magnum opus.
Yes. Well, as the years progressed through my 30s, I became very happy with my work, very confident. Some might say arrogant, because I thought I wanted to do the big work. And I had always been interested in the different languages of music that I worked in, moving effortlessly between pop music and electronic music and contemporary classical or oriental music. Some of it came out as, I felt as though there was 100 composers living inside my head. So it's really something that was like growing inside me for years. Let's do the big work.
Mm-hmm.
And when I turned 40, I had just about enough money. I had no studio, for instance, until the age of 39. I didn't have my own home studio.
Yeah. But it wasn't that common not to put it into the dark ages or anything, but, you know, in those days, it wasn't as common as it is now, where a home studio is so accessible and so easy to set up.
Yeah, it cost a fortune. Yeah. It cost £18,000 then. And by that point, I had gotten into Ace Donna. And there's a small stipendium that goes with that each year. And that enabled me to, instead of the money just draining out every time it was spent, Ace Donna enabled me to actually start saving some money. And a couple of other jobs came on that earned me some proper money, like just a proper, normal, everyday wage. The biggest one of that was playing the piano in a production of Salome at the Gate Theatre every night. And it hundreds of performances. I loved every minute of it. But I was 39 before I had any money. And without blinking, I spent it all, every penny on a studio. And from that moment on, the foot's been on the accelerator, so to speak.
Right.
I was able to work 8, 10, or 12 hours a day, which I still do.
And do you still?
Still
yes.
do, yeah.
Yeah. Amazing.
Mm.
So, just getting back to Babel for a moment, it took, you say, 10 years to complete.
Yeah.
And it really is a trip in Roger Doyle's imagination, musically, lyrically, storyline. I mean, this whole concept.
It's got everything.
Everything. It even has a radio station.
It has its own radio
station. KBBL.
Yes.
And the most attractive late night DJ, Ishke Babel.
Yes. There's a completely fake, there's four completely fake radio shows, all done in the studio. I compose all the music, obviously.
Yeah. And the script and text.
That was me collaborating with writers. I mean, I didn't write the scripts for those. These were actual real DJs that I met on my travels in the States and in Canada. And I told them the names of the pieces that I'd already composed. And we worked it into a sort of Babel-esque tower, broadcasting from the 25th floor of the Tower of Babel. And we had such fun doing them.
Yeah. What's the recording tech, or the composition and then recording technique here? Is it something, I read somewhere that you said something like you like to make a mess and then piece it all together.
That was more true of Babel than on the Passades. Yes, that's true. I like to experiment a lot and to bypass. I think it's important for people like me, well, for composers like me who like to experiment, to try out stuff that you know is going to make a mess, like load up all the equipment and press play on everything. Like, I've done that before. Just load everything up and press play on every play button you can find. an avalanche of 80% rubbish with gold bars in it. And the gold bar, the gold that comes out of that with a lot of editing, that's make the mess, and then it's like, metaphorically, you're on your hands and knees amongst it, picking out the best bits and sticking them together. And that way you can really bypass your thought processes and your own logic and your own limitations and your own ways of thinking. You're creating on the fly and seeing what happens. And I've many times I've sat in the studio sort of pinned to the back of my chair in amazement at some of the stuff that comes out that would never, like I say to myself, I could never predict this. I could never do this any other way.
Yeah.
And being, you know, very delighted at the results.
Mm. A more recent release was Chaland.
Yeah.
A very beautiful work. And
very personal work.
Very personal.
Yes.
Moving.
Yes. It's definitely to do with, you know, I'm talking about... earlier, I was talking about the 60s and the 70s, so it's obvious now that I'm not a young man. Things change as you get older, in a beautiful way, when you realize that time is not going to last forever as you think it will when you're a young person. You never even think of these things.
Sure.
When I was in my 40s, I recorded all the best telephone answering machine messages I had that I received. I had a flat in Merrion Square, and I was living the life of the kind of freelance artist, man about town, on my bike. And you listening to these phone messages, you really get a sense of what it was like to be in Dublin in the late 1980s as an artist, with all the stuff happening around, all the artistic events. So I always knew I had about 8 hours of these messages. And a couple of things happened. I started listening through to them, and I became a grandfather. Those two things happened at the same time. So I thought I would try to incorporate some of these messages, which are haunting because they're from the late 1980s. My parents are in there. They're no longer alive. Jonathan Philbin Bowman, my dear friend at the time who lived in the flat below me, is gone too. And of course, there's my son, who is now himself a father, him as a young boy, age 10. So these messages I still had, and I was started composing music around them.
You're also involved in, I don't want to say pop music, because it's not pop music, but it's the lighter side of Roger Doyle too.
Yeah.
And that's great to see that balance between the...
Oh, yeah. Well, I've always loved pop music. And before I was a jazz rock drummer, I was a pop drummer in local bands. I grew up in Malahide, and we had the worst band name ever, the Malabeats. it's there. Like, even in this, I've just completed Act One of an opera, and there's kind of almost pop music in there too, amongst all the electronic abstract stuff.
Mm. That's the opera that was performed at the Kilkenny Arts Festival recently.
Yeah, we performed Act One of it, which is 45 minutes. We got an Arts Council Opera Project Award to enable us to do that much of it. Mm-hmm. Our hope and plan is that we'll be able to complete a 2-hour version of this opera, you know, should we be successful in applying for a further grant.
And upcoming performances of that same segment then are in the Mermaid Arts Centre in Bray.
Yes, October the 3rd, Mermaid Arts Centre in Bray in the evening, 8 o'clock. And then there's a free performance on Saturday the 5th of October in the Samuel Beckett Theatre as part of the Dublin Theatre Festival. But you got to, because it's free, you've got to go and get the tickets
now
from the festival office in East Essex Street. You can't actually book them online. You have to go in and get them.
Oh, okay. The development of equipment and technology has progressed enormously from the days of the Moog synthesizer, or your favourite is the Fairlight.
Oh, the Fairlight computer music instrument, yes. That was, I no longer use it, but it came into my, didn't come into my hands because I didn't own it, but I had access to it from 1982 to 1990 and totally loved it, yeah. It was the first computer synthesizer.
Right.
And you could do all sorts of amazing things with it. Technologically, it was very, very, not very advanced.
But crude.
It was very crude, but right. At the time it looked as though it was out of Star Trek.
Yeah.
It looked very fancy, and you had to insert these cards in and out, these sound cards, 8 of them, and had 2 floppy disks, and you could draw on the screen, a green screen, you could draw the waveforms, and you could do all sorts of stuff on it. And I worked with the Fairlight, I composed hours of music on it and brought out a double CD called Fairlight Memories a long time ago. It really was, I suppose, the first digital introduction to me of digital technology, because right. I didn't really understand what digital technology was at the time. I'd been so used to tape recorders and multi-track
analog. Yeah.
So I've seen the technologies changing, and I still try and keep up with the changing software. There was a time a few years ago where I just couldn't get, like, there's one of the programs is called Logic. I couldn't even get a click track going on Logic. I couldn't do anything with it. And I had Logic on my computer for years. And the same with Pro Tools. I couldn't get them to do. But whatever happened about 4 years ago now, I now use them all the time, and maybe they've just become easier to use. But now I'm quite good with both of them.
Are you,
and others.
Are you a man that battles with the analog v digital, or are you comfortable now with what's become digitized music?
Oh, I'm comfortable with anything that's going, really. I'll use whatever tools are there.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing with the stylistic changes. I don't think my primary motivation is to compose the greatest music that I can.
I've seen you recently in the company of Vivian Long and Niwel Sumbu for the new Triangle project, and that is an album that's going to come out in the near future.
That's the plan. Yes, we have quite a lot of material. We haven't actually gone into the studio yet. We have lots of good live recordings.
Great stuff, yeah.
But we'd like to do it properly in the studio, so we haven't done that yet. But that's something that's happened to me in recent years. I'm playing a lot more live in public on pianos and keyboards.
And you enjoy that?
I love it. Right. Love it to bits. And there's such talented musicians.
And cross-genre too, because you've embarked, well, it's not new, because I know that you were involved in Irish traditional music and its fusion.
Yeah.
Way back in the early days.
Yeah.
But you've more recently been involved with some great trad players.
Yeah.
And that harks back to a work from way back with Peter Brown and Jolyon Jackson.
Yes. Kyolshee,
what, 1960-something?
1973. Yeah. Recorded in St. Catherine's Church, Thomas Street, with Gráinne Yates on harp.
On the harp, yes.
And it was so cold, she had to put her gloves on in between takes.
So, Roger Doyle, it's been such a great pleasure having you with us. Thank you so much for being our featured artist and for having this conversation with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Further information and all Roger's music is available on his website, rogerdoyle.com.